So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government instead of from those who would take away our freedom. If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, there is no freedom.
They'll never take our freedom!
Freedom?
Hello everyone and welcome to Freedom Rings. This is Tommy Freedom broadcasting to you loud and clear on the TFR Radio Network from a cabin high atop a mountain ridge somewhere in Appalachia. I'll be your voice of reason for the next 30 minutes, so keep it right here. Hey folks, it's Tommy Freedom for Freedom Rings, and we are continuing our series on Off the Beaten Path. Now, this week we continue with the mysterious states of, and I will leave it to George because he has found an interesting intro here. And let's see if you can pick up what state this actually represents. Event you did not pick up on this, that was the theme from the 1976 Clint Eastwood classic The Outlaw Josie Wales. Josie Wales, of course, was from Missouri, and if you remember, Granny always referred to him as a Missouri ruffian. Ooh, nice crescendo. Now, Missouri borders 8 states, and as far as I know, that is more than any other state. I could be wrong. But it borders Tennessee, Kentucky, Illinois, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa. That is astounding, folks. There is just so much to see in this state because it's basically a central point to the Midwest and the West and the North and barbecue and everything. This state just has so much to offer. So I want to start with the McCormick Distilling Company. This is just north of Kansas City. And when Lewis and Clark stopped at the limestone spring that was nearby because of the clear water that was coming out of it, they realized that they were onto something. And that was in 1804. But by the 1830s, the spring was supplying water to a lot of the wagon trains that were coming through. And a fellow by the name of Ben Holliday recognized it as something more than that. And he was aware that the limestone water, being both iron-free and acid-free, was especially good for making whiskey. Now, with that type of water, folks, that is what you actually make bourbon from. Bourbon is made in Tennessee and Kentucky, but this is one state, very similar to North Carolina, where you could still make bourbon legally. So in 1856, this guy built a distillery there, and it is now included in the National Register of Historic Places. And you can take guided tours and you can see all the stages of whiskey making by the sour mash process, which involves adding to a batch of fermented malt in some of the previous batch. That's how you get a consistent flavor from one batch to the next. You just keep mixing it all together. So that's pretty cool. So if you're into going through distilleries, you know, you can go through the Jack Daniel's distillery and Jim Beam. I was not aware of this one, but it sounds like a very interesting thing to see and do, much like going to the Coors Distillery in Golden, Colorado, or Budweiser, or something like that. So keep that in mind. It's just outside of Kansas City, which is, of course, known for its barbecue. Now, the thing about Kansas City, folks, aside from the fact that it sits in two states, is that it also has two different kinds of barbecue, beef and pork. Now, here in the Carolinas, barbecue is pork, hands down. It's always pork, and it's it's shredded. It's shredded, and it's usually dry. There's no sauce mixed in with it, some vinegar, something like that. You have Lexington style and some other styles. In Texas, of course, barbecue is beef because of the cattle industry. And Kansas City was at the heart of where the cattle drives would end. So beef barbecue became big there, but also because of its proximity to Tennessee and Kentucky, also had the pork barbecue. So you get any kind of barbecue that you want in Kansas City, Missouri. Okay, next, staying in the same general vicinity, in the town of Kearney, is Watkins Mill State Historic Site. And it's a pretty interesting place to visit. It's a 19th century complex, and it includes a wooden mill and the family home of Waltis Watkins and his wife Mary Ann. They built it in 1850, and the house has a simple but elegant brick facade and 20 rooms to accommodate the family of 11 children. Wow, that's a big family. Now, most of the place is unfurnished, but nonetheless pleasing, with its walnut trim and cherry doors. Now, Watkins' first venture was a cotton mill, which was unsuccessful, but he did have a flair for farming and expanded a holding of 80 acres into a property of more than 3,000, and it became known as the Bethany Plantation. And in 1860, Watkins turned once again to the textile business and began to build his woolen mill, which, like the house, was made from his own timber and bricks. Deer tracks that were made on the bricks before they dried can be seen on the floor in the storage shed. That's really cool. There were more than 50 textile machines valued at $20,000 at the time, which was like around $2 million now, were shipped in by river and hauled the final 20 miles by oxen. Now, eventually, the Bethany Plantation became a self-sustaining community. Now, the three-story textile mill is the only one in the country with its original machinery. The various hankers, pickers, twisters, and looms are still there, and it presents kind of a lean and elegant design and a tribute to a very prosperous business that finally succumbed to new techniques of mass production at the turn of the 20th century. Now, it's of note here, loom tenders made $1.50 a day, and that's pretty good. The person who operated the mechanical sheep shearer earned $2.50 a day, and was paid 50 cents of this to the boy who turned the crank. Adjacent to the historic site is a recreation area with a nice lake. It's got campsites with hookups and trails, and it is open daily except for Easter, Thanksgiving Day, Christmas, and New Year's Day, and admission is charged. But it sounds like a very nice place to hang out for a day or two, but man, $1.50 a day and $2.50 a day. Back then, that was an incredible amount of money, folks. That was probably close to $25, $30 an hour. So whoever was working there had a darn good job back then. Now, if you're a military buff, in the town of Laclede is the General John J. Pershing Boyhood Home State Historic Park. Now, he graduated from West Point in 1886, and General Pershing underwent his baptism of fire against Geronimo's Apache Indians and completed his career as a commander-in-chief of American forces in World War I. No small feat. Now, Pershing's boyhood home, it's kind of plain, but it's sort of attractive. It's two stories, It's got white clapboards with restrained Gothic trim, and the furnishings aren't those of his family, but they are from the time period. Unfortunately, those were lost over the years. But there is a lot of Pershing memorabilia throughout the entire place, though. An upstairs room serves specifically as a small museum for Pershing's many medals, among them the Silver Star for gallantry. Now, I gotta tell you, though, he's got a missile named after him, and there's no bigger medal than to have a ship or a missile or a spaceship named after you. Also on view are photos of some of his early campaigns and the bejeweled sword that was given to him by the City of London in 1919. And from a tape recording that outlines his life, you'll learn that Pershing favored Gary Cooper for the starring role of a projected movie about his life, and that his nickname Blackjack was a reference to his one-time command of the 10th Black Cavalry. So it had nothing to do with cards. I did not know that. He was in charge of a black... Wow, I did not know that. Now, on the site, they've relocated the small school where Pershing once taught for $35 a month, which, again, that's a little over a dollar a day. That wasn't bad for back then. And a bronze statue of Blackjack Pershing also stands on the grounds before a wall of honor inscribed with the names of several hundred war veterans. It's open year-round, and admission is charged. But that's pretty cool. And Pershing also, if you remember, was the one that lined up all the Muslims when they were having trouble with them, like we're having right now, once before. He took, I don't know, it was like 50 of them. He lined them all up, and he had several soldiers. He had a large barrel full of hog's blood. He had the soldiers dip their rifles in this vat of hog's blood, all their ammunition. They then loaded the rifles. They shot and killed 49 of the 50. Let the one Muslim go back and tell everyone else what happened. And that, my friends, is what stopped the Muslim problem last time. And that's what it's going to take this time. Oh, really, that is the only thing that those animals understand. And folks, radical Islam, they are animals. They are not humans. The only thing that they understand is that kind of violence. They're not afraid to die because they think when they die, they're going to visit Allah. It's only dying unclean by coming in contact with a pig, a swine of some sort, and then dying that terrifies them because they're unclean for 2 weeks after having come into contact with it. That is the one thing that terrifies them and puts them on a level playing field. And this is why I've said time and time again, every passenger who gets on board a plane should have a dab of pig's grease placed on his or her forehead. And I'll guarantee you there would be no more hijackings, there would be no more planes being blown up in midair, because they would be scared to death to die just like the rest of us. So God bless General Pershing for what he did to stop it back then. We need him back now. And possibly with Donald Trump getting elected into office, he's going to put someone in there who's going to do the same thing. We shall see. All right, I'm going to take the break a little bit earlier today than I normally do. When I come back, I want to talk to you about Mark Twain, some of his boyhood home, and the caves that are named after him and that were used in the movie Tom Sawyer. And Mark Twain is one of America's best writers, I think, in portraying the way that life was at that period of time. Of course, he was born Samuel Clemens. I'll get into that when I come back from the break. Very, very fascinating author, very talented author. And when I come back, we'll get into him. Back in a bit.
From now, my kids will be outnumbered. Are you going to let that happen? Don't leave the mess for your children to clean up. Join the struggle. Start here at KKK Radio.
Minorities, homosexuals, and women. I'm not a hater, but I hate that line.
Me too. You know, you see it written like that in the media.
Yes, I've noticed that. Why do you think that is? I don't have anything in common with so-called minorities.
Minorities, right. White people are the world's minority.
That's true.
I think they like to group all women together so white women won't consider their race. If they don't consider their white identity, they won't recognize the threats against it.
That's a really good point.
So, whenever I hear the phrase minorities and women or minorities homosexuals and women, I'll call it what it is, cheap shots against white women.
This message brought to you by the White Women's Perspective.
The further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those that speak it. Get your truth at Radio New America with your host, Billy Roper, at KKKRadio.com.
Gay pride days, school assemblies, posters on the wall. It's in our face every day. What's a white Christian teen to do? And does anyone really care? Listen each week to White Youth Focus, where teens discuss the propaganda war against them. Moderated by caring and thoughtful white Christian activists, Billy and Charity. Because it's okay to be white and proud.
Hey folks, Tommy Freedom here for Freedom Rings. I invite you to tune in every week and listen to my show, Freedom Rings, and hear what I, Tommy Freedom, have to say. It's usually pretty interesting and quite informative. It may have something to do with freedom. It may have something to do with liberty. It may be downright funny, but it will always be informative. So be sure and tune in each week to listen to me, Tommy Freedom, here on my show at Freedom Rings, broadcasting to you loud and clear on KKK Radio. G. Shepherd bring us back in off of the break. And as I indicated before the break, I'm going to be talking about Mark Twain. Now, Mark Twain was born Samuel Clemens on November 30th, 1835, and in what he later described himself as the most invisible village of Florida in Monroe County, Missouri. Well, yeah, it's very invisible because I can't even find it on the map. The closest thing I can find to it is a town called Paris. So, if you can find Paris on the map, you'll be able to find this. But Samuel Clemens was one of the most iconic American writers, I think. There were others, but I think he was one of the most, if not the most iconic American writer. I mean, he talked about that whole era of the steamboats and the Mississippi, and the country was still, it was developing, but it had cities. It was just a great time. So this place here, this was where he was born, and it was moved to its present site in 1930, and the house is now enclosed by the Mark Twain Museum. And in it, you will find first editions of his books and a manuscript copy of The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Other displays offer a colorful view of Mark Twain's adventurous life as a steamboat pilot, which actually is where he gets the name of Mark Twain. Mark Twain was a call that they would give on the boat indicating a river depth. It was Mark Twain. Mark was look and Twain was the depth. I think it was like 15 feet. I'm not positive on that. He was also a printer's apprentice, a soldier, a gold and silver prospector, a laborer, a newspaper reporter, and, of course, one of America's best-loved writers. Now, there's an oak-shaded picnic area that overlooks the South Fork of Mark Twain Lake, which is a large, sprawling body of water partly bounded by the Mark Twain State Park. Fishing and swimming are permitted in Tom Sawyer Lake, which is a nearby pond. From the picnic ground, you can take a short path to the observation platforms on the sheer cliffs of Buzzard's Roost for excellent views of the surrounding countryside. Now, the birthplace and museum are open daily except for Easter, Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day, and there is an admission charge, but the park itself is open year-round. Now, also nearby, just outside of the town of Hannibal, Missouri, is another Mark Twain museum. This is his boyhood home, not his birthplace, but his boyhood home, just outside of Hannibal, Missouri. And not too terribly far from there is Mark Twain Cave. Obviously, there are a lot of things nearby that are named after Mark Twain. He was, of course, their most famous native son. But Mark Twain Cave, if you ever have the opportunity to get in there, you will recognize as part of McDougal's Cave in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer that featured Jodie Foster and Johnny Whitaker. The really horrible one that didn't follow the book at all, but the most famous version. There was another cave that was used in there that's somewhere in the western part of the state. I did look it up one time, and its name and location escaped me at the moment. But Mark Twain Cave was, for all intents and purposes, McDougal's Cave in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. So if you're ever around the Hannibal, Missouri area, and you're into Mark Twain, and especially if you've had the opportunity to visit his house in Hartford, Connecticut, where he wrote the majority of his famous works, then to go back and see where he actually came from and that whole area, because Tom Sawyer was based on Mark Twain or Samuel Clemens as a child. That whole rambunctious character was pretty much autobiographical. So if you're into his works, nice place to go and spend some time. Now, a great place to visit is the Lake of the Ozarks State Park. And this was created in the 1930s by the damming of the Osage River. And the Lake of the Ozarks is the largest man-made lake in Missouri, with a main channel 120 miles long. The park encompasses 17,087 acres. And it embraces the Grand Glaze arm of the lake and the surrounding Osage River hills. A landscape of dense oak and hickory forests with stretches of prairie-like savannas, caves, bluffs eroded by the Grand Glaze Creek, and open rocky areas like miniature deserts with temperature extremes that are known locally as glades. Now, glades are actually open rock areas, so that fits it very well. Sounds like a really, really cool place to visit. Now, in addition to all the pleasures of the lake shore, the park offers 10 trails of varying lengths for horseback riders. Horses can be rented at a stable on Route 134 near the campground. Hikers and backpackers will love this place. The trail through the Bluestem Knoll Savannah gives you a view of the kind of prairie landscape that greeted the first settlers, while the Woodland Trail offers the peacefulness of Patterson Hollow Wild Area, which is an untouched wilderness of old meadows and oak and sassafras woodlands. Now, if you're into hiking, you will undoubtedly enjoy this area, particularly this path, and the Trail of Four Winds, if you're interested in butterflies. Spring wildflowers, on the other hand, are best observed along the lake view, swinging bridges, and rocky top trails. Here's something interesting. Missouri claims more caves than any other state. I did not know this. Some 4,000 in all. That is amazing. The park's Ozark Caverns, a feature unto themselves, are reached by taking routes A and C off of Route 54. Wow, some of the main attractions in the cave are the stalactite formations and Angel Shower, a waterfall descending from apparently solid rock. There's a guided one-hour tour that covers 1.5 miles. It's open year-round, and there is a charge for tours of the cave. But that is amazing. 4,000 caves. I had no idea. And if you listen to the show long enough, you know I love caves. I visited 30-plus caves across this country. So getting underground and just seeing everything down there is absolutely amazing. So if you're into cave tours, this sounds like one that is a definite must-see, in addition to all the hiking that's nearby. Great, great place. Again, Lake of the Ozarks State Park. There's no town close by that it mentions. I guess it's that big that you can pretty much find it by looking on the map. Now, finally, if you are a devotee of Little House on the Prairie, either the books or the TV series, you will enjoy the Laura Ingalls Wilder and Rose Wilder Lane Home and Museum. This is located in the town of Mansfield. It's pretty much a required visit if you're into Little House on the Prairie. And it was in this location that Laura Ingalls Wilder actually sat down and wrote her series of books. And there was more than one. It wasn't just Little House on the Prairie. I've mentioned this before. There was Little House in the Big Woods. There was a bunch of them. And they've been published in over 40 languages. That's pretty good. Now, the museum displays include foreign and domestic editions of her various books, press clippings, and worldwide fan mail. Well, a lot of that came from kids. That's not something that's going to be really interesting. But they've got personal belongings of hers that includes the 1889 lap desk that she brought here by covered wagon from her home in DeSmet, South Dakota. The pens that she used all of her life, her sewing machine, and some samples of her needlework. Now, half the museum is devoted to the mementos of her daughter, Rose Wilder Lane, who was an author as well. Did not know that. Now, we all know that Laura's husband was named Almanzo, and they moved to Mansfield in 1894 and then into their house in 1897. And Laura thought it best to be happy with simple pleasures, and therefore the house is small and rather undistinguished. But it's next door to the museum and may be seen by a guided tour only. And you might just kind of note that there's Currier Knives prints, a Western Cottage organ, and a Victrola in the drawing room, some throw pillows that were made by Laura, and several tables crafted by Almanzo, who, like Pa, was a carpenter. And his workshop contains the tools of his trade, as well as some leather and other things that have survived, because he also made his own shoes. Very, very cool. It's open Monday through Saturday, May through mid-October, and admission is charged. Very, very cool. Well, folks, that brings to a close this week's edition of Off the Beaten Path for the state of Missouri. And I will be back next week. I'm trying to think how it's going to go, if I'm going to be continuing or if I'm going to do something for Christmas. I'm not really sure yet. There's been a whole lot of stuff going on in the past few weeks. I may just do another special and then come back and do the Christmas show. I'm not really sure yet. So I'll surprise you. That's one of the things about this being a variety show. You never know what you're going to get, even when I'm doing series where you think you know what you're going to get. So as usual, my friends, it's been Tommy Freedom for Freedom Rings. If you would like to get in touch with me, you may do so at TommyFreedomRings@yahoo.com. Until the next time, my friends, take care. Out for now. Now I'm going to leave off here with a tune by Missouri's most famous artist, current artist. Now, Mark Twain was by far Missouri's most famous author, but Sammy Hagar is without a doubt Missouri's most famous musician. So as you've heard it coming up here in the background, I'm leaving off with his classic from, I believe it was 1984, off the VOA album, I Can't Drive 55. Now just remember back to that, folks. When it was double nickels everywhere. Some of us are old enough, we remember speed limits of 65, 70, 75 miles per hour. And in the case of Nevada and Montana, no speed limit whatsoever. Then everything went double nickels. And then all of a sudden, we were able to get our freedoms back to drive at faster speeds. So this is a harkening back to the old days when we really couldn't get anywhere. And as Sammy says, what used to take 2 hours now takes all day. I remember that time, folks. It was a bear trying to drive from North Carolina up to New England. And it would take just 5 hours longer than it now does. It's amazing how much 5 miles per hour can make a difference. And when you're changing that to 15 miles per hour, how many hours you save off your trip. So, again, be back next week, my friends. Take care.